On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh Bass, Marcus Barrahall, we break down all of Kyrie Irving's quotes from the weekend, plus losses to the Bucks and Sixers. The slide continues, all that and more, coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm your host, Josh Bass. Joining me as always, Marcus Barrahall. This is your home for daily Brooklyn Nets content. And Marcus, it's been a tumultuous time for the Nets these last couple days. We were riding on cloud nine, I think one of the last times that we were both together, with the news of Kyrie Irving's return, the thrashing of Atlanta. And then slowly but surely, I think my hope has faded away. But how are you doing, more importantly?
Personally, I'm good. But in regards to the Nets, yes, definitely not the best time. I think they've lost 11 of 13 now. Two more losses over the weekend to the Bucks and the Sixers. Not totally unexpected given the competition, but still, you would have liked to have won one of these games in this tough stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think both games against Philly were somewhat winnable, at least. I think we could say that,
yeah.
Especially with the lead the Nets had in both games. Obviously, the Bucks, they just got thrashed. But I think let's start with the biggest news, which is Kyrie Irving and all of, oh, God, this guy. What he said to the media after the, what was it? It was the first Philly game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so saying that, yeah, it's kind of obvious that the Nets still need another piece or two to really put themselves into the upper echelon. That's even with KD coming back. He named guys that he considered part of the core, which were himself and KD, DeAndre Jordan, of course, the backup center and their best friend, Garrett Temple, which I think confused literally everyone, Dinwiddie and Karis. Those two make sense. But notably, did not say guys like Joe Harris, who has been a cornerstone of the Nets franchise and one of the shining stars of their developmental process. Jarrett Allen, the starting center as well, someone who is only 21 years old and has made a lot of strides in the last few seasons, but still not without his faults. And also, even though I do not like him personally, Taurean Prince, a guy who was just extended before this season for another 2 years following his contract expiring this offseason. So, Marcus, what do you make of this?
I saw a lot of people blowing this particular quote up. I didn't think it was the worst thing that he has said, partially just because, like, if you watch the actual video and don't just read the text of it, it's a lot less damning than the text of the quote is, mm-hmm. just because it seems like he's kind of put on the spot. He's not, like, reading from a prepared list, like, these are the guys who I want on the team going forward. It's just kind of, like, naming guys off the top of your head. And while, yes, he obviously should have named Joe Harris and Jarrett Allen, especially Taurean Prince probably too, I don't think it was, like, an intentional thing to leave them out. It felt more like he was just kind of rattling off names and happened to not mention them. So I didn't think that was the worst thing. But even still, it wasn't great. And the fact that you're, like, asking for more help after shooting 6 for 21 in a loss where the rest of your team played pretty well, that's tough. And then he had other quotes over the weekend too, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Yeah, we'll get to those, trust me. But it's like, for me, yes, I mean, I do agree with what you're saying, where it wasn't as bad as if you were just reading the text. But whenever you talk to the media, especially about those very kind of poignant things, you're going to give yourself an opportunity to make a mistake. And that's what happened to Kyrie Irving. He had a flub, and he put himself in a position where he did forget a couple of the key Nets guys and put in, like, DeAndre Jordan and Garrett Temple over them. And then even if he loves Jarrett Allen and loves Joe Harris, it's still more media scrutiny for a guy in Kyrie Irving who certainly does not need it. And the way the Nets team is performing right now, sitting at 18-24, having dropped four in a row, basically all the expectations that they had for this season, even though they weren't monumental given KD was going to be out, they've just clearly underperformed them. And now you just open yourself up to a whole other can of worms where you should right now be focusing on basketball and gelling as a team. And now the biggest story is going to be, oh, Kyrie Irving doesn't like Joe Harris. Should he be traded this offseason? Are they going to look to make a center upgrade because he didn't mention Jarrett Allen and try to play his buddy DeAndre Jordan more? It's just unnecessary stress for a Nets team right now that needs to get back to the basics that they were doing last season that made them successful.
Yeah, totally agree. And it's also like partially, I think, just because it's Kyrie, like it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like if Damian Lillard is asked post-game about the Blazers and he's like, yeah, we need more pieces, and he doesn't mention like Zach Collins or Anthony Simons or something, like I don't think it becomes nearly as big of a story just because with Kyrie, like there is all that baggage. He does have a reputation as a guy, like fair or not, who is not good for team chemistry and who maybe kind of like blows up locker room. So I think that because of that, people look at his words a lot more closely and they kind of don't give him the benefit of the doubt on things like that, which he doesn't necessarily deserve because he kind of has, I don't know, he's shown that he's at least like not great for locker room chemistry, if nothing else.
For sure, for sure. And I think like if he wants to say, hey, we need more pieces, that's understandable. It's clearly true. The Nets are terrible right now. But I think when you name the name, like, that's the thing you don't do.
Yeah.
That's what's putting you into harm's way.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Because, yeah, it's not a stretch to say that the Nets need help when they're going through this patch that they're in. I mentioned at the top, they've lost 11 of 13. So, like, to say that the team needs to play better, like, sure, yeah. Yes. But to, like you mentioned, to name specific guys, and to not really put any of the blame on yourself when you haven't been shooting well, and when you missed all that time with an injury and you're now out again for this most recent Philly game, like, yeah, and you're supposed to be the leader with KD out, like, there's all these things where you would want him to at least publicly take a little bit more responsibility. Maybe he's doing that in private, but it doesn't really hold much weight to the media and to fans if we can't see it.
Yeah, I did read something that that Kyrie and Jared Allen hashed things out and talked for a little, and Jared Allen was basically after like, oh yeah, it's like it's whatever. So
that sounds right.
Classic Jared Allen response. And yeah, like I know a lot of the fans like seem to be very frustrated with Kyrie. My dad included. He sent me a big email with the subject Nets saying how he regretted signing Kyrie and all this, and he can't stay healthy, and now he's causing problems and discontent. So I think if my dad's the voice of the Brooklyn Nets fan base, I feel like, so if he is upset, I assume many of you are as well.
Yeah, one of those classic all caps emails from him.
Yes, gotta love it. Marcus, did you want to talk about the Kyrie MLK quote also?
Yeah, just quickly. This was more absurd, I thought. For those who didn't see it, this one I think was yesterday or the day before. Yeah, Kyrie said, when I was out for those 7 weeks and not saying anything and still people are saying things about me, it's inevitable. They crucified Martin Luther King for speaking about peace and social integration. Yes, but also this seems like a little bit of a different circumstance, a different situation. I don't think Kyrie has done as much, I'll say, as someone like MLK. And to kind of compare the two. Yeah, yeah, that might just be me. I don't know. I think that maybe personally I'll probably remember MLK longer than I will Kyrie. No shots at Kyrie. He's a great basketball player. But it's two different things, and it's kind of... This was very baffling to me, just to, like, make this comparison. I saw some great Photoshops on Twitter where they were, like, putting Kyrie's face, like, among great makers of social change throughout history. It reminded me of when the Clippers were like pitching Blake Griffin on re-signing him, and they did a similar thing to like a lot of those fake graphics where they like put him amongst like historical figures and things like,
oh my
this
God.
Is the kind of history you're gonna make. And like at the end of the day, basketball is a game, it is a sport. Even someone like Michael Jordan or LeBron James, the two greatest basketball players ever, have not had the impact of someone like MLK or someone like fighting for actual real world change. I just could not believe that he did that. And even if it was like kind of a joke or like, you know, like I don't know what he was going for, but yeah, just crazy.
Yeah, it was just like out of nowhere. It was bizarre. I mean, like the actual statement is they're just two separate facts that aren't really related. Like the first part, I was out for 7 weeks, not saying anything, and people were still saying things about me. It's inevitable. Yes, because we're all following the team. We want to get an update on where you are. We thought it was going to be a day-to-day, and then you were out, as you mentioned, 7 weeks. So we were concerned and confused, and the Nets didn't do anything to help Kyrie's case because they were either mum or saying things that ended up being completely inaccurate. The second part...
If he had stopped there, he would have been fine. That would have been the normal thing to say.
Yes. The second part is also a fact. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. It's, they crucified MLK for speaking about peace and social integration. They did crucify him when he was obviously making a monumental change for society that put us on the course for a much better path. It doesn't have anything to do with Kyrie having an injured shoulder and not saying anything. So it's just like, just, for Kyrie Irving especially, just like, keep every, like, great historical figure out of your mouth. Like, no comparisons to them. That's just probably the best way to approach things, because when you do, you get yourself into a lot of trouble. And regardless of whatever gets misinterpreted, it's still giving yourself, again, like the first thing, the first statement when you name the players, the opportunity for people to get on you and misinterpret your statement and the actual meaning that you have behind it.
Yeah, it makes it, like, much more understandable that he didn't speak for so long. Because it seems like when he does, like, he gets way always into trouble. The weeds and, like, the specifics. Yeah, it's too much.
Yep, all this Kyrie Irving talk is really, it's, you know what, it's making my blood boil. I need to get calmer. You know, we talk about physical fitness on this program a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm. The number one app for sleep and meditation has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. I would love all those three things. For LeBron, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. He says, getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for both my body and my mind. And if you head to calm.com/lockedonNBA, you'll get 40% off a Calm Premium membership. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership. And that's at calm.com/lockedonNBA. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Once again, get started at calm.com/lockedonNBA. That's calm.com/lockedonNBA. So the Nets went out yesterday against Philly on MLK Day. Also, quickly, MLK Day is, I think, becoming, I'd say, I prefer MLK Day basketball to Christmas Day basketball now. Is that a hot take?
I think I agree. People used to say, like, Christmas was the unofficial start of the season. I feel like it's kind of now, it might be MLK Day, just because now we're, like, pushing towards All-Star, the trade deadline's coming up, like, I think I'm seeing a lot more casual fans who are, like, tuning in more now. And there were way more games. There were so many great moments. Dame Lillard went crazy late last night. So definitely more opportunity for cool stuff to happen. Unlike Christmas Day, where it's only five games, only one at a time. Like, not as much action.
Yeah, I mean, there's 28 teams playing. Yeah, there's only five games on Christmas. Given that it's... they make the schedule obviously before the start of the season. There's a lot of rooms for duds. Usually I'd say one of those two are duds. I'm tired. I'm usually not watching the late game, which is like, whatever, Denver versus Portland usually. I'm like, okay, I'll catch those teams another time. So I don't know. I love MLK Day.
Oh, yeah. Great. And there were a lot of great games yesterday, for sure.
There was. Some people would say the 76ers-Nets was in that category because the score was close. It was actually one of the most horribly played games on the Nets side I've seen in a while. They dropped this one 117-111. A complete and utter disaster in terms of doing the basic fundamentals of the game. A cacophony of errors. 22 of 34 on free throws, first off. Horrible. The Nets continue struggling mightily from the line. 22 turnovers. 22. There was a stretch where I think they turned it over one time per minute for like a 8 or 9 minute stretch. It was terrible. Guys trying to take the aggressive Philly defenders off the dribble, they were just stealing everything. Terrible passes, blowing fast breaks, not cutting the way they wanted to, like travel, stepping out of bounds. Every single type of turnover you had in this Nets-Sixers game. And there was a stretch where Philly was also really rough in the second quarter, but they got their act together. Ben Simmons was amazing. Horford was dominating Jarrett Allen inside and showing that he can still be a very effective post-up player because of how strong he is. Josh Richardson was getting buckets. Korkmaz hit that really back-breaking three at the end, and ultimately the Nets just didn't have enough juice to get a win against Philly for the second time in a week, second loss in a week, even without Embiid.
Yeah, and the turnover thing was crazy. I think 10 of those 22 turnovers came in the fourth quarter, which is almost one per minute. That's insane. And yeah, Philly definitely like had moments where they weren't playing great either. Like in the fourth quarter, I think they had a stretch where they just couldn't score the basketball. And the Nets came back, they made it close, and then like you said, Philly just pushed it over the top. And this game really, really, really felt like deja vu, not just with the Philly game, with kind of how like a lot of the losses this season have gone, where the Nets came out looking great in the first half. They scored 68 points by halftime, and then 23 in the third quarter, 20 in the fourth. Like, they just run out of juice, and like with Kyrie Irving out again, with hamstring tightness this time, like, they just didn't have the playmaking down the stretch. They had good balance offensively, like in terms of scoring. Like, they had seven guys in double figures, but it just wasn't enough, and they could not stop Al Horford, like you mentioned, or Ben Simmons, who was phenomenal and has like become quietly kind of like a net killer these last couple games that they've played.
He was really, really good. Like, his ability, especially I love the play where he'll like basically be at the half court line and then just like cut full sprint, catch the ball at the free throw line, and be able to like finish at the rim. Like, I think it's underrated because people are like, oh, he's just a passer. Like, he has no offensive game whatsoever. He's afraid to shoot. He's afraid to shoot. But he is such a dynamic finisher with both hands at the rim, and he has pretty good touch on floaters as well, that when he's on and he has space because Embiid's not in there, he can be really, really devastating for a team like the Nets that has struggled to guard those bigger players. Even though Ben Simmons is nominally a point guard, he is 6'10 and really built like a tank. And he's just tough for anyone on this Nets team to match up with.
Yeah, and like to put up a 34-point triple-double when you can't shoot outside the paint and the defense knows you're not going to shoot outside the paint, like, that's insane. And like you said, his dominance, his aggression is like what's made the difference the last few times that Philly has played the Nets without Joel Embiid on the court. Maybe it would be a different story if Embiid played, but then obviously you'd have to deal with Embiid. So this is a matchup that I feel like every time these teams play, it's like close, and then Philly kind of wins it at the end. I wouldn't hate seeing this as a playoff series just because I think it would be entertaining, but Philly just has a ton of talent.
Well, if the Nets make the playoffs at this point, I'll be happy. So any playoff series, and literally anything at this point. Yeah, it's funny because we actually had their number last year in the regular season. We went 3-1 mm-hmm. against them. Remember, Pompey was very scared about Spencer Dinwiddie. Shout out to Locked On Sixers. Go give that a listen. But then, you know, they handled us in the playoffs 4-1, even though it was much closer than that, than I think what the series standings indicated. But, you know, the Nets, like, this is a game they actually really could have used Kyrie Irving, because any sort of ball movement or action they had was fully disrupted, or guys trying to go one-on-one. I tweeted this. The Nets' offense in the fourth quarter would have been much better off with whomever just, like, dribbling into a pull-up three every possession and just hoping it went in, because especially with the way they were turning the ball over, they were giving Philly an opportunity to really get out in the break, and that's where Simmons thrives. So they could have used Kyrie, who's more of a one-on-one guy. But Dinwiddie, I mean, he couldn't get anything going. He was hit a couple threes in the first quarter, but was really just trying to draw fouls, and it wasn't working. I mean, Philly was just playing as aggressively on D as I've seen any NBA team in regular season in a while, and they were causing a lot of problems for, like, I think LeVert ended up with an okay game. He had a really nice first half, but like people were like, oh, he had an awesome game. It's like he finished with 16 points on 16 shots. Like, that's something to write home about. And that's the thing with LeVert. When his moves work, they look really pretty, but in the overall scheme of things, he's a very inefficient player that hasn't developed a ton. And that's a problem. And he's someone, I think, right now where his reputation is far exceeding his actual play, and he's someone that I would look to see what his value is in the league right now, because especially given that he's a bit of a wayward three-point shooter, he likes having the ball in his hands. It's just not going to happen as frequently as his team gets better and better. So I'll be interested to see what they do with him.
If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all of the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Nets is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Nets fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners, not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Nets fans and a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you.
The one guy I think that we can agree on who was the clear highlight of the night was Nick Claxton.
Yes, king.
Love him. Love him. He was awesome, finished with a career high 15 points. Had 13 of those in the first quarter, was hitting threes, getting offensive rebounds, drives from the three-point line all the way to the basket. My roommate was like, oh, who's this guy? He's awesome. I said, that's Claxton. He's great. He was really doing it all, and I think something that Brooklyn's beat on Twitter pointed out, which was a really interesting point, is the difference between aggression and strength. So, like, neither Jared Allen has – Jared Allen doesn't have aggression or strength. He can't finish around the rim. He doesn't go up strong, so he's not putting himself in a position to get fouled, really. Claxton's not strong either. I do think he can get there because his build looks more well-equipped to putting on muscle. But he is extremely aggressive on the boards, and especially going up. He goes up so strong that he's either getting fouled or finishing the basket, and I think that's an excellent tool to have and a very underrated one as well for an NBA big man.
Yeah, I think that's such a good call because I remember, I think it was the Milwaukee game, they showed a graphic of Claxton and Kurucs just like as two like young Nets kind of, and Kurucs weighed more than Nick Claxton, and Rhodey is not like a particular, like, I think of him as kind of like a slim, long, Gumby-esque guy.
He's 230.
Yeah, I know. That's surprising to me. But for Claxton to, like, be that build or even smaller, like, is crazy because, like you said, he just kind of charges into guys. In that Bucks game, too, like, there weren't a ton of bright spots, but he was one of them in that game also where he's just going right at Brook Lopez, kind of contorting his body well and, like, going right into the contact and either finishing through it or going up strong enough where he's kind of there to get an offensive rebound and a putback. He had four offensive rebounds in this game also, which were actually all four of his rebounds. And yeah, that aggression goes a long way. We see it time and time again with big men like a Montrezl Harrell type or just like any of those rim-running guys who maybe aren't the most, like Harrell's undersized too, like aren't the biggest on the court, but if you bring that toughness, like that does go a long way, especially in the regular season when teams are more prone to like mental lapses on defense.
Yeah, I definitely think the Harrell comparison in terms of the pure aggression is really good. And I think, yeah, in an 82-game season, you need guys that are just going to ball out every game, really go full throttle. I mean, is Nick Claxton a perfect player yet? No. He definitely, like the strength thing really comes into play on the defensive glass, I think. Mike Scott was beasting him on the boards, had five offensive rebounds, and Mike Scott's not like, he's not someone who's either big, he's like 6'8", he's not really a bruiser, I mean, he's known for shooting threes and just getting into fights with everyone, but he's not someone that's known as a rebounder for sure, especially not on the offensive glass. So I think Claxton will definitely have to get stronger, but the overall broad strokes of a skill set are really there. Took a really hard fall last night, ended up staying in the game. I mean, it might have been a blessing in disguise with this DeAndre Jordan injury. He's supposed to probably miss another two or three games, but when he comes back, I mean, with the spark Claxton's providing the Nets, is there any merit for finding a way to get him in the rotation somehow?
I think he should be playing over DJ probably. I don't see that happening though. I think that for like before all these injuries, they were playing Claxton at the four sometimes, which they might try again. That would probably mean a guy like Kurucs might fall out of the rotation. I don't know. But I feel like you, have to keep playing Claxton. Like, there's no way not to. He's looked so good in these last two games.
Yeah, I think if anything, like, just kick Moose out of the rotation, because
and play big off the bench.
Just play big, yeah. I think see what works there. Maybe you're toying with the starting lineup a bit, where maybe you say, hey, let's move Temple out, and then Temple would go anyway with Kyrie in. Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting puzzle to solve for, or maybe just say, hey, DJ, take a little bit longer with your recovery. You know, you're so important to this team in the future. We can't have you rushing back in a season where we're only 18-24. Wink, wink.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it would be like bringing Prince off the bench and starting Kurucs at the four, and then you play Prince as kind of the three off the bench.
That could work. That could work. I think Kuruk should be starting anyway over Prince.
Yeah, I mean, he only played 17 minutes in this game also, which I felt like
he could have been out there more. Yeah, especially like the end of the game where the Nets needed to, they were trying to foul Philly. Like, throw Kuruks out there, because he's the only player on this team right now that makes stuff happen defensively, so he can just, like, irritate you or try to get some sort of turnover or anything. Instead, they had, like, Prince and Jared Allen, who aren't going to do anything. but, yeah, I mean, this Nets team, like, TLC, like, hit three threes, revenge game for him. He looked really good, very confident shooting the ball as well. But, I mean, ultimately, like, you throw Moose out there, he goes 1-5, 0-3 from 3, 0-3 on free throws also. Like, like, Moose is probably one of the worst rotation players in the league right now. And to throw him out there really puts your team in a can of worms. And, like, that's the type of stuff the Nets can't just have happening right now, because they have no margin for error. So, explain to me in this game, like, Moussa doesn't have it, clearly. He never does. Why do you need to play 10 guys? Why can't TLC, who was awesome, play more than 15 minutes? Why can't Kurucs play more than 17 minutes? It just baffles me. And I think Kenny, like, there's not a ton of difference between a 9-man rotation and a 10-man rotation.
Yeah, I think that for this game, it was probably because Temple was just coming back, so he only played 20 minutes. I think that definitely Kurucs and TLC could have played more, but I think that the fact that like a starter only played 20 minutes, that leaves open the room for like those extra few minutes that Moussa wound up getting. I think that if Kyrie played, obviously he wouldn't have played, and then if Temple had been like fully healthy, he probably plays like 30 minutes, and so Moussa doesn't really see the court. But I definitely agree that TLC and Kurucs should have gotten those extra minutes before giving any to Moussa.
Yeah, like, I have a question for you. Are you going to pick up Moose's option next year for his contract if you're the Nets? Or just decline it and say good riddance?
I might get rid of him.
I don't see any hope for him becoming a good NBA player. I think he's actually at his best driving, and even then he's not going to be that good at that just because his length isn't that good and he's kind of a frail body type. But shooting the three, I mean, he thinks of himself as this, like, pull-up three artist, and he is horrible.
Yeah, he has, like, a game where if he does the things he does in the NBA and the G League, like, it can be decently effective, like, kind of similar to Theo Pinson. But then they, like, don't adjust their games at all coming to the NBA, even though the competition is obviously way higher. So it seems like I agree. I don't see him being good. No offense to him.
I don't know. At least just try to throw him in a trade this deadline and say, hey, at least can we create an extra roster spot or what have you for this season, and just try some other people out. But I mean, he's a lost cause right now. I just don't see any path to him becoming a reliable NBA player. There's no trait that he has that is really, I think, going to be at even an average NBA level. But you know what? I've been proven wrong literally so frequently with what Sean Marks has done. So I'm sure he will do it again, and Moussa will blossom into that extra piece that Kyrie said they needed.
Yeah.
What if Kyrie listed Moussa as part of his group?
You know, me, Jean, and Theo. Yeah. We gotta build around the core.
Theo, Chioza, Jeremiah Martin.
Bring Henry Ellenson back, you know.
Oh my god. A couple other things on this one. I really miss Norvell Pell for Philly. They're saving him because he only has 45 days to play with the big team, so they're saving some of the last few. I think he's on his last one, actually.
Yeah, he's got one day left. I thought of you when I saw that he wasn't there.
I was so mad. So they played out Quinn a little bit off the bench with a three, chopped cheese. But, like, also, Thybul, I mean, listen, this guy is insane on defense. Like, I know he was 0-5 from three and didn't do much offensively, but, like, anytime Annette was dribbling near him, I was like, oh my god, please get rid of this and don't turn it over. But he is a really stellar defensive force.
Yeah, it's wild the impact he has on that end, like so early in his career. And then, like, when Simmons is locked into, like, the two of them combined for 9 steals in this game. That's a big part of why the Nets had so many turnovers. Like, obviously, they weren't executing, but also Philly's defense is, like, very good when they want to be.
Mm-hmm. It's frustrating. Okay, Marcus, next game against the Lakers on Thursday. What are you expecting? Do you think Kyrie will be back? Do we have any chance here now that AD is back and healthy for the Lakers?
I thought that there was maybe going to be a chance. I guess there still could be. The Lakers just blew that game to the Celtics, though, which I feel like is going to motivate them over the next few. So we'll see about that. I don't know. It'll be nice to see Jared Dudley. Hopefully Kyrie plays, because then whenever he and LeBron play, that's always interesting to watch. I'm not expecting much, though. Hopefully they can, like, win this last tough game of this 5-game stretch before they hit that 7-game stretch against teams that they should all beat. They kind of need to win like 6 of those, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. It will be definitely nice to see our old friend Dudley. I think, after losing by 32 to the Celtics, I'm sure the Lakers will not be taking that lightly and will probably come out and beat the Nets by 32 or even more. It will be tough because Nets definitely can't match up with either LeBron or AD, so having them both be out there is going to be very, very difficult for them to stop, especially, listen, if DeAndre Jordan is not out there, which, as we talked about before, he definitely will not be. This is the one game they could actually use him because Dwight Howard, they need to stop him on the glass, and I could just see him getting like 7 or 8 offensive rebounds against Claxton. No fault of Claxton's, but he's just not prepared to handle that type of big man in his rookie season. So overall, it looks like the Lakers are a really tough matchup for the Nets. Have guards like Avery Bradley, Danny Green, that are really going to, Caruso especially, that are really going to get after the Nets guards and high scorers and make life difficult for them. So we'll see. The Nets team continues to surprise me, both good and bad. But I would be very, very surprised to see them get a win here or even make it an extremely close game.
Yeah, the only plus side I can see is that it's a back-to-back for the Lakers that play the Knicks the night before, so maybe, just maybe, they'll rest somebody against the Nets. That's what I'll hold on
they
to.
They play a G League team and then the Nets. Well, that'll do it on today's show. Of course, follow us on Twitter. I'm at @JMBass_. Mark is at Marcus Barahal. The podcast is at Locked On Nets. I was live tweeting the Nets game yesterday. You could see when I was happy, when I was angry. I wear my emotions on my tweets. So definitely go check that out. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast, and we'll be back in your ears soon.
Bye.